This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter. Presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Thursday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
And we're going to jump right in welcoming to the show as we have him on twice a month, which we love these segments. Jeff Reynolds, senior editor with Restoration-News.com, senior investigative researcher, Restoration of America, former Oregonian, now Florida man. Jeff, you've got sun behind you, so you apparently are not in the path of the storm of the century.
That is correct. And I wanted to make sure, I know we're on radio here, but just for the benefit of Hunter and Denise, who can see my camera, I want you to see this beautiful yellow ball in the sky behind my head, which is making it about 75 degrees right now, which is not exactly what you guys are experiencing. I'm not trying to rub it in or anything.
You know what? I'm questioning our friendship now. That's so cruel.
Well, you know, the last few days,
we can be friends down here too.
We're catching glimpses of that yellow ball in the sky, but yours is obviously more efficient than ours because ours is only getting up to about 40 degrees.
Wow.
I'm layered up in flannel.
I'm not quite double what you guys are dealing with.
Yeah, I suppose we could we could relocate to Florida, Hunter. I guess nothing's stopping us.
Yeah, you know, Florida. No, there might be some restrictions, you know, when they put up those walls to keep us in Oregon and make us pay our taxes.
That's right, yeah. The Portland ghetto. Yeah.
All right, well, go ahead, Jeff.
Go ahead.
Okay, so before we was doing show prep, and again, we got there's so much to talk about. There's a lot of breaking news and some good things happening. I did want to mention right before we went on air that it looks like officially the United States has withdrawn from the World Health Organization. So that's a woo.
Where's our
that
applause?
That is spectacular. Woo-hoo. I wrote an article about Tedros. I've forgotten his last name now. He's from Madagascar, but he's the head of the WHO during COVID. I sort of unmasked who this guy really is, and he's a complete globalist who is supported almost exclusively by China. So it's not exactly like the WHO was going to be a neutral arbiter during the investigation into the origins of COVID, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know about you guys. I mean, have you watched the full Trump's full speech at Davos? I've watched some of it and some of the highlights. Holy crap, no punches pulled. I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, no, he's actually doing a great job. Behind the scenes, what I'm hearing is that he's signing all sorts of military deals. He's actually arming Denmark in exchange for the Greenland deal, and all kinds of other stuff going on behind the scenes. You know, he's doing his typical Donald Trump off the cuff comedy hour during his speeches, which is spectacular to watch.
I know, but it is.
But behind the scenes, he's got such a competent team with Rubio and Besant and Howard Lutnick all over there negotiating deals, that it's going to be a very productive session for the United States. America
yeah,
first.
Like I agree, and it's really coming. He is so funny, and like I said, it's taken me sort of years to get here. Where now, when I watch that, I'm like, okay, I get it, and I appreciate it. Taking me a while to get here, but Besant. Holy, just some of the stuff, and even Lutnick, I mean, some of the clips I've been seeing, I'm so impressed, and it's like...
He completely undressed Gavin Newsom yesterday, and deservedly so, and round of applause for Scott Bessent. Just an absolute body slam takedown.
Yeah. Well, what is it, Sparkle Ken with the knee pads? And I was watching Newsom's clip, and it's like he basically just insulted the entire European Union. I mean, what a turd.
Yeah. No, I mean, he goes over there thinking he's one of them more than he is one of America, right? And they wouldn't even let him into some of the events, you know, and he's just a gadfly. He is so irrelevant. I mean, he has spent the last, ever since 2020, he's spent the last several years making himself completely irrelevant. That guy should be president now. And instead, he's gone out and tripped all over everything and made himself look like a buffoon. I mean, you cringe when you watch him speak now.
Yeah, and the fact, I don't know if he thinks he's doing himself any favors going on, you know, talking with like Ben Shapiro. He was on Charlie Kirk's podcast before Charlie was assassinated. And he just, he flip-flops and he can't commit. I mean, it's ridiculous to watch him. It is. It's very cringy and embarrassing. He's greasy and slimy.
Yeah, and you know, the way he crosses is very creepy. And he comes off as like, I give him credit for wanting to go on to conservative audiences. You know, he had that famous debate a couple of years ago with Sean Hannity and
DeSantis.
He's been on with, and DeSantis too, right? So good for him for engaging with the other side. I'll give him that much credit. But he ends up losing so badly, and he just doesn't look the part. You know, he really doesn't know how to, you can tell he's filled with nervous energy. Mm-hmm. If you read his body language, really is unsure of himself, which is why he goes with that false bravado thing, and it just doesn't work for him. It's like Tim Walz.
Well, speaking of Minnesota and Minneapolis, I know we've all been very frustrated with our Attorney General Pam Bondi. It looks like stuff's starting to go down. I mean, I saw that there was an arrest of the BLM activist Nkema Levi Armstrong has been perp walked. Mm-hmm. That one who was a school board member, she's gone, and that. Ooh, where you can like smell the video, that whatever his, I forget his name, the belligerent guy who was just the worst offender, I think, in the church assault, he's being perp walked.
The one, the first name you mentioned, she was the one that actually tweeted out the list of names that were involved in the planning of it, and then that last guy, just seeing the videos and the in your face mentality, and I sit there and you watch these videos and you go, this is the kind of guy that is going to pop off and actually assault or murder someone in one of these events.
And that BLM gal, somebody tweeted out, they went through her financial disclosures, and she, believe it or not, may not be completely above board with her the NGO that she runs. She runs a nonprofit, and they went through the expenditures for the nonprofit, and like 90% of the money that they raise through federal grants and through donations goes directly to her salary. And the amount they pay her versus the amount that they dole out in grants is it's a minuscule fraction. So she's just complete fraud.
Well, and so many of these NGOs are, I don't know, and maybe this is a stupid question, but I mean, who audits these NGOs? I mean, is it the IRS? Because I think there's so much grift and fraud, and I think it's statewide. There's an article we're not going to get into. Hunter and I have talked about it earlier. It's from Data Republican, the Minnesota as Systems Failure, how NGO, they process dissent.
That's a great article.
It is, and I wish we could get into it. With an hour, we just don't have the time. I highly recommend it. I had to, you know, look up autopoietic. It's a term that I'm not super familiar with, but just real quick, it means the system responds to reality only through the constraints of its own internal organization. It's basically kind of closing feedback loops, and after a certain amount of time, new data coming in doesn't really affect decisions that are made. And I think this is just rampant, and I would have to say almost all NGOs, I don't have a lot of faith in how a lot of them are run.
Well, and she cites the example of customer service deterioration, which has been something that I've been harping on for 30 years. But it's exactly the same thing. You know, it makes me think of the systems failures that led to the Jerry Sandusky scandal at Penn State University, the defensive coordinator for the football team.
I remember.
Who was convicted of raping multiple young men. Yeah, it's likely that the head coach, Joe Paterno, the legendary head coach, knew about it for decades, and you know, he reported it up the chain, but then, you know, wiped his hands of it. And so at some point, any institution is going to get to the point where it's more about protecting the institution than seeing through the original vision of the people that founded it.
Yeah, and I would have to say that's probably kind of runs rampant through a lot of these. Certainly not all, and there are a lot of them. And it also kind of comes down to you've got certain groups and nonprofits and organizations that are in place to fight cause X, but it's in their best interest that cause X is never defeated because then they have no reason for existing.
Mm-hmm. Well, the NGO thing is a little bit different because those pop up simply because there's a whole pile of money that the government is doling out, and they pop these NGOs up just to grab at the cash. You know, if you remember that Matt Lesko guy that that used to advertise on TV about there's free money everywhere.
I have talked about him. He actually had a book. There was a book on.
Yeah.
Well, this is all your money, and here's how you can get. He had a bow tie too. Mm-hmm. We see yeah, wear yeah, people with yeah. the bow ties.
Well, no,
he was like Bill Nye, only less reliable.
Well, I just go with a lot of these NGOs that we've seen pop up in particular the last 5, 6, 7 years. So many of them, I think, don't have an initial, mission statement beyond get some money in our pockets and let's rock and roll. I mean, we saw it with the
right.
BLM.
They put out their mission statements that have the proper keywords in them, women owned or minority run or whatever. Equity this and justice that. And suddenly you're sitting on several hundred thousand dollars in grants.
Mm-hmm. And all this money just sort of flows through here. It gets diverted over there. You don't really notice it because it's sort of kind of buried under a mission statement over here, but then it's funneled off over there. I mean, I would like to see a lot of this apparatus, a lot of these things just fully exposed. So I don't know whether this, with the arrest of this, I mean, I think it's wishful thinking, but maybe, I don't mm-hmm. know.
Yeah, to answer your earlier question, it would be the IRS that would conduct all those audits.
That's what I thought.
They're too busy going after school board members and Catholics who read the Latin Mass.
Yeah, right. Or you $601 transferred on Venmo. We got to take a look at you. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Well, I mean, Rush Limbaugh used to bring that up all the time. I mean, he was audited almost every year as long as there was a Democrat in the White House.
Exactly. What, you think that's not a coincidence? That's just the luck of the draw. All right, we're going to take our first break. We're talking with Jeff Reynolds, who has the sun behind him in Florida. Hunter and I are not that lucky. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by the Perlin Mill and by Mart.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Jeff Reynolds today on this Thursday, the end of our busy broadcasting week. So we got to talk Oregon gubernatorial primary. I believe it was last night. Last night was Wednesday, right, Hunter?
Yep. Still Wednesday yesterday.
HD 17 Representative Ed Deal officially announced his campaign at a very cool brewery, and it looked like it was a packed house. So that brings us up to now. Okay, I'm going to list them off. We've got Daniel Bethel, mm-hmm. current Marion County Commissioner, was the first to come in. We have Christine Drazen, David Medina, podcaster, YouTuber. He popped in Monday, I think. He made an official announcement on the Benny Johnson show.
Mm-hmm.
Benny Johnson. Somebody named
Dyuck. D-U-Y-C-K. I'm not sure how you pronounce it.
I don't either. Those are the four that have officially filed, at least according to Grok. I did see, and I noticed this because I've been following, there was a gentleman named Patrick Hale, who was, I don't know that he had officially filed, but he came out on X a day after Ed Deal announced withdrawing his candidacy, saying that he was waiting for somebody that he could support. He's throwing his support behind Ed Deal. I got to give Patrick props for really putting Oregonians before ego.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, a lot of us have been in that situation where it's kind of like, I'm going to put my name in there because I don't feel like I can support anyone who's in that position. So I understand why he at least put the feelers out there to get a response on why on possibly running and making at least his social media circle aware of his thoughts. But I can also very much respect that now that someone that he feels he can support has stepped into the race, withdrawing and supporting that person and pushing his followers in that direction as well.
Yeah, and I know, Jeff, you're in Florida in the sunshine, but I know you follow all of this. You've been kind of keeping an eye on what's been going on.
I have, yeah. And obviously, Christine's running again. She was the nominee the last time around.
Right.
And looking for a rematch. David Medina and Ed Beal are kind of intriguing. Mm-hmm. Danielle Bethel, I don't know much about her. She seems nice, and she's got a track record, mm-hmm. in Marion County and county mm-hmm. politics. So
yeah,
Ed Beal and David Medina are interesting cases. David Medina obviously, has a huge social media following looking to capitalize on that, right? So that makes sense. I understand what he thinks his pathway to victory is. I wonder if he is able to attract across the board kind of voters, people who are not aligned with the GOP but are sick of what's going on in Oregon. I'm not sure what his appeal is.
Let me interject real quick, because I want to ask you a question about that, because he does tout that he was, I think he was a pardoned J6er.
Right.
And
which
so
was the headline they led with
in
Oregonian, of course. Yeah.
And see, I think from my understanding, they're saying he was actually never charged, not pardoned.
Oh, okay.
At least that's what I've been hearing kind of out of his camp and from followers.
We should do more. We'll do more research.
But yeah,
on that
but right. one
but
way
the,
or another,
the Oregonian clearly put that out there to define
exactly.
him in everybody's mind as
and
toxic,
that's how
right? it, whether he's right. toxic or not. That's
exactly
that's the Oregonian's job is to define him before he can define himself.
And in Oregon, that narrative is going to be that's going to be tough. That is going to be hung
that's
around
exactly
him.
Right.
On everything that he does. Okay, so Ed Deal now. Because Ed Deal, I've been impressed with that deal. He's made a lot of national news. He's brought a lot of attention to the craziness in Oregon.
Yeah, well, Ed Deal has also, he's obviously taking advantage of the gas tax referral referendum.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
A lot of momentum there, and deservedly so. That was a big deal in a short time frame, and they really knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm.
Ed and Bruce Starr and Jason Williams of the Taxpayers Association,
mm-hmm.
all of those people that were the co-petitioners on that.
Mm-hmm.
But Ed has some advantages here that are intriguing. He's really mm-hmm. good on media. He's really active on social media. He's able to communicate complex issues in Salem to folks that follow him on social media.
Yeah.
So that's if he can come up with a cogent campaign strategy and learn to leverage that stuff effectively, he's got a shot. And he's obviously an anti-tax activist. So that will appeal to a lot of folks who are sick of what's going on in Oregon.
Right, and that whole issue was really nonpartisan, and as far as what they did, him and Bruce and Jason, I mean, that crossed all party lines, and so, of course, now we're seeing the Oregon legislative leaders are looking like they want to refer the repeal of the transportation tax to voters in May. Well, color me surprised. No, because we knew they were going to play games with this. This is shenanigans.
Well, they never play tricks like that. What are you talking
about? Oh, no, they're so honest.
Yeah. No, and of course, you've got the Democratic Attorney General making ruling on it, writing the ballot measure for them, and you've got the Democrat Secretary of State verifying signatures. So, yeah, of course, the mountain is still steep to climb to get this thing repealed. The games that they play are obvious, and what they're trying to do is having it on the November ballot would have really hamstrung Tina Kotek's reelection bid.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And can you imagine voting yes to Tina Kotek and yes to repeal the referendum at the same time? Or the gas
can those
tax
two,
bill?
Can they exist simultaneously?
I said, how do you explain a Tina Kotek win with a 90% of the populace saying we don't like your number one item that you put on our laps. So I'm kind of going, it doesn't add up when you add 1 + 1. So yes, they want to move it to May, and I'm just like, these are games that we shouldn't be allowing them to play. But do we really have control when there's a supermajority sitting in the House down in downtown Salem?
Right. Yeah, so they're going to come up with any sort of legal justification they can to move it to May. We'll see if it holds up or if they are required to put it on the November ballot. I I'm cautiously optimistic that they won't get away with it, but we'll see. Yeah, I think it's only fair that she asked the voters to reelect her around the issue that she staked her entire governorship on.
Yeah. Everything was on this. This should be hung around her neck every time that this comes up.
If you really believe this was necessary, then own it.
Well, to me, I get so frustrated because the number one reason that I'm seeing out of the Democrats that are mulling this around and moving it to the May ballot is that, well, we need to know what budget we're going to be working with. Well, shouldn't your people have the – I mean, we do this at the Salem level. We've talked to the mayor about how – when the budget committee gets together, if they don't know and there's something coming up on a ballot that could change how that budget works, they have to do one with and one without, so they're prepared for whichever way the vote goes. So wouldn't you think they could do the same thing? Or do they know so definitely that it's not going to, you know, I'm just going, so where are these financial advisors and the people putting these budgets together that they can't put together two based on whether this passes or not?
That is what's commonly referred to as a political smokescreen. That is not the real reason. The real reason is they are trying to protect Tina Kotek from the consequences of her being governor for a term.
And that is exactly it. Okay, we are coming up on the bottom of the hour. Yeah, we are. Okay, we're going to continue our conversation. We're going to talk a little bit about language and how it matters, the language that we use. So we're going to take that break for the bottom of the hour news. And here, where's the music, Hunter?
It's there.
Oh, okay.
You just got to listen.
Okay, everybody, we'll be back after the bottom of the hour news. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
All righty, welcome back, everybody. We are talking with Jeff Reynolds, senior editor with restoration-news.com. And I know I always say this, but I'm going to say it again. Go out there, bookmark it. I was out there today. There's so many good articles. A lot of in-depth stuff you guys do out there. It's really good stuff.
Well, thank you. And we have a whole bunch of breaking stuff coming in the next few days, too. There's on Tuesday, we're releasing a 3,500-word report on, so a long-form report on the abortion pill. And the astonishing increase in abortions across America because the Biden administration approved the mailing of the abortion pill without a doctor's visit.
I'm sorry, that's horrifying. That makes every woman's bathroom an abortion clinic. I mean, just the ramifications
exactly
of that.
Right.
And then we talk about population. This is a tangent. Well, we're not going to stay here. But as far as, you know, the fertility and where we've got people, and especially in Western countries, not reproducing. It's not that women aren't getting pregnant. We're aborting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's
no. That's a significant driver, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's probably a combination of the two things, right? Abortion culture has created a situation where it's no longer an imperative to reproduce.
Yeah. And that gets into, I mean, Hunter, we never have enough time. And we'll maybe get into this next time you're on. But as far as feminism and the big lie, frankly, as far as I'm concerned, that has been sold to women for a couple of generations. And it's brought me where we are today. And that does kind of tie in with what we want to talk about next, which is the use of words and sort of the weirdness of how we play with our language. And this really started for me when we were having the hearings about boys in girls sports, and you had people, you know, medical people using terms like cisgender, trans girl, trans boy, transitioning, assigned. All of this is just, it's nonsense language.
Or gender affirming care.
Oh my God, that's one of the worst ones. Gender affirming care would be saying God created you as a boy and he doesn't make mistakes there. I affirmed your gender.
Right.
Or actually your biological sex, but yeah.
Yeah, no, the entire concept of gender was invented in the mid-50s by the
John
Hindu
Money
folks.
Oh, yeah. And John Money?
Yeah. All the activists, all the free love activists. So, it is really troubling to watch. And it just sort of happens subconsciously, too. You know, anybody that you know could, I mean, we've even seen it on Fox News, you know, supposedly conservative news outlets. I've heard it on Fox News Radio a bunch talking about gender affirming care and, you know, so, and I've written articles on this about the lies that underpin the entire movement, the transgender movement. There are no good statistics. They keep telling you that if you don't let your kid transition, they're much more likely to commit suicide. There is absolutely no scientific data behind this. There are some surveys that they've concocted that purport to show this, but those surveys have absolutely no scientific rigor, and they're easily debunked. Just from a statistical fealty standpoint. So there is no actual research into this. But what they do know is that for children in this situation, for children with gender dysphoria, well over 95% of them will grow out of it.
Yes.
And it's just a phase.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you listen to the detransition movement and a lot of people that are detransitioning that were sort of sucked into this system and their parents, well-meaning as they were, being told just what you said, you know, would you rather have a dead son or a living daughter or whatever, the manipulation that happens to people that are scared, they don't understand it, they trust in the medical profession. But then you have detransitioners, Chloe Cole comes to mind, there's a number of other ones who debunk a lot of that, and then of course they are instantly excised from, you know, the community. But these are brave men and women that are coming out and speaking truth about this. Go ahead, Hunter.
Well, I just sit here and I go, you know, when you look at, you know, the when they do these polls, especially with teenagers and under 18, and they have these astounding numbers of either, you know, gender confusion or gay or anything else. And I'm sitting here kind of going, and I had this conversation a while back with somebody, you know, and one of the most obvious statistics would be when they're talking about the suicide thing. And I'm going, if you really want me to believe that 20% of society has gender dysphoria, believes that they were born in the wrong body or whatever you want to say, and if we don't confirm it, they're going to commit suicide. You know, you go back a few generations into the 50s and 60s when, you know, the numbers were so low and people weren't, I mean, they weren't willing to affirm gender back then. So why didn't we have an epidemic of suicides at that point if the numbers you're going to quote me are legit?
Right. It all started happening in the late millennial generation and the early Gen Z. Before that, it just wasn't even a thing. But you know, you talk about language, and this is part of a larger conversation that we need to have as a society about the softening of language that leads to infantilization of the way we think. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that bugs me the most is we no longer say people died.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we no longer say they committed suicide. Mm-hmm. We say they died of suicide, or they passed, or they passed on, or passed away. It's almost as if society-wide, we can't even say the word die anymore.
Yeah.
And why is that? Why are we so afraid of words? We've built in some sort of mechanism by which it just feels offensive or mean or whatever. When precision in language is how you understand each other and understand the world. When you have this phenomenon that leads to the infantilization of our thinking, then we are no longer able to think definitively in fact.
Right. And I think that's been a long time coming.
Driven.
Yeah.
I like this tweet from Babylon Bee, Seth Dylan, because Hunter and I have talked about this a lot. You can't oppose their ideas while using their language, because their language affirms their ideas. And then also you can't have an honest if you can't name it. It's like Scott Jennings was on CNN and that little snot-nosed kid that was in there telling him he can't say illegal alien when that's a legal, perfectly valid term. Mm-hmm. So you got these people telling you, well, you can't say that. Why? Because it makes you cry?
Well, and that's the other part of the softening we see in language. It alleviates personal responsibility. And I look at the phrases homeless versus houseless. And when you're talking about the homeless, there's a reason they're without a home. And a lot of it is personal choices. But when they use that word houseless, you start thinking, well, we just haven't provided a house for them to be in.
Well, and that's a really good point, Hunter, because another term that they use instead of calling somebody homeless, they say they are experiencing homelessness or houselessness, as if it's some sort of an epidemic that is a public health crisis.
And it's happening to them. They had no role in it. Now let's go back and look at, you talk about how this has happened over time. Back, you know, I don't know, a couple generations ago, we would use the term vagrant.
Right, or bum, or hobo.
Hobo, or I think those all have different meanings. And the same thing with illegal alien. Now they're undocumented, and it's become a legal migrant. Now, migrant is a word that has a meaning. I would dare say we go back to marriage and same-sex marriage, because marriage is a thing. It has a meaning. It means man and a woman. So, over time, these things, they lose their meaning. We forget their meaning. And I think the softening of it is because everyone's so afraid of being called an ist or a phobe or something else. But we cannot combat these ideas if we can't even speak the truth about what they are.
Yeah, you know, the softening of the language is actually a weapon. It is disguised as something else, but it really is weaponized to make people who think less emotionally into the enemy. It really does otherize, to use one of their phrases, people who don't toe the line. So it's a social contagion. Some of it's deliberate, some of it's not, most of it's not, but you know, some of it is, you know, like the activists putting out there the gender affirming care language and the syllabus that you all have to follow. You know, so they sort of seed the society with all of these new terms, and then everybody just sort of falls in line. Oh, I guess I'm being insensitive if I don't say this. Well, let's at least have the debate about what this is before we accept it as a society.
It's like belligerent kindness. You will be kind, damn it. And I think it's Helen Andrews. She wrote the feminization. That's that great article. And I think a lot of that stems from this, which really what woke is. I mean, we think we're being kinder and gentler, and we're not really telling the truth. And I think that's all part of it, because the way women, the feminization of institutions, which basically I think almost all of them have been. And again, I can speak about this as a female. But you do see it. And actually, if you have not watched the trigonometry episode where she's on it, I highly, highly recommend that, where she talks about that and how it changes the way we all interact. And because women just deal, we're for consensus, we're for more compassion, for kinder, gentler. And so you can see the evolution of what we've done to our language following right along with that.
Well, you know, it's almost as if there's a difference between men and women, and we should honor that and structure our society based on those differences, not by making them equal.
Right. And you can't, if one goes one way, and I was sort of, you know, the early, what was her name? Betty Friedan. The early was more about giving women choices, is morphed into, we hate men and we're not going to have kids anymore, to hell with the species.
Well, I think Betty Friedan probably started out at that "we hate men" stage, but that's a different
story.
Well,
yeah, okay. She didn't publicly say that. The feminine mystique. She didn't go into that. But it is fascinating. And again, if you look at sort of the evolution of words, which I love, I'm a total geek. There's so many videos out there on YouTube that I will just do a deep dive into that. But it's not doing us any favor. And I think a lot of people are rejecting that. Hence, seeing that the word "retard" has come back, because that was verboten for a long time.
Oh, you said that on the air, even.
Well, it's a word. It has meaning. Again, these words have meanings. And, you know, you don't use it derogatorily, but I am seeing more words coming back where a lot of people are saying, no, this is a valid word and it means something and I'm going to use it for what it means.
Yeah, you know, my dad raised me. My dad, rock-ribbed Republican from Kansas, you know, just the most conservative person I ever met. He raised me never. I mean, he specifically drilled it into all three of me and my two brothers. Never say the N word. As a conservative, you know, he was adamantly opposed to that. I say that as perspective because when we create a society in which there is no context in which you could say something offensive.
Yeah.
It's saying the N-word in an academic sense or reading Huck Finn or Tom Sawyer or you know,
quoting
those
rap
kinds
lyrics.
Of things. Mm-hmm. Well, that, yeah. That's
well, that's
it,
and that's right? What I was going to point out. Is that, word is being hammered into the next generation's head through pop culture.
Right.
Yeah, no, that's true, but it is heavily context dependent, right? And if you're not using proper context, then you're clearly a racist and need to be canceled. But the point is, when you create in society, when you have things that are just not able to be considered, eventually people are going to start asking questions and rebel against that, and that can lead into some pretty uncontrolled places that are not desirable for society. If we can talk about things, they no longer have power.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so, you know, having these words that are sort of off limit, and I think I've seen other people with the N-word. I hate that word. It makes me physically, I would never use it. But other words like, you know, like retard or retarded or things like that, they do have meaning and they do in context. And so to even be afraid of saying words like that is really just ridiculous to be. I feel like we're kind of getting away from that. I could be wrong. Maybe I'll get hammered.
All I know is I'm glad that we didn't have cell phones to record video of me and my friends in high school calling each other every name there was.
Right. Well, and that was a guy thing. Well, it was a girl thing, too.
Well,
I got to tell you.
You know, I go to that one and I go, you know, it brings me to some of these videos I've watched lately of altercations on the street. You know, especially when it involves an activist mob and somebody they've deemed is against them. Mm-hmm. And it's literally one or two people involved in this altercation and then 20 people running up with their phones out.
Yeah.
And I'm just going, what happened to the day and age when we dealt with differences behind closed doors rather than on camera?
I think those days are long gone, unfortunately. And then it's also funny because you have, again, the you'll be kind, damn it, people bring out all the slurs that supposedly, but that's okay. And they use it against the people they don't like. So it's like, I can't keep track of it.
You're not supposed to.
You're not meant to keep track of it. You're just supposed to feel.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're supposed to feel. It's wake me up every day with the fresh hell. And what are the rules? And I think a lot of people are like, I don't care what the rules are. Civil society, you know. Okay, here we are. All right, let's go ahead and take a break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Cozy's New York Deli.
All righty. We are wrapping up our conversation today with Jeff Reynolds, senior editor at restoration-news.com. I was out there poking around today, Jeff, and I did see another website you got, which was so interesting, and I can see doing a deep dive on this. It is illegalaliencrimes.com, and it's a really pretty comprehensive database. I clicked on my state, and it was like, oh, interesting. I did not know that. So it's like an interactive map. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this was a project we originally put together for the 2024 election cycle. We wanted to make sure that there was that issue. We knew Donald Trump was running on that issue and prominently, and so we wanted to be able to point to when the leftists say these aliens are, you know, not harming anybody, they're in our country being peaceful. The only crime they committed was entering illegally, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
We wanted to hit back and say, look, we have 50,000 crimes across the United States, more so now, that we have trapped or tracked just in the last couple of years. So we have an entire database. You can go on the click on the map and click on your state, and it'll even break it down by county for you. So it'll show you where the crimes were committed or where the person was either charged or convicted.
I've got it up right now for Oregon and Marion County. I just clicked on Marion County, and there's one there, Multnomah County, Malheur County. And then it clicks you over to the story so you can learn more about it. So that's interesting.
The West Coast, we didn't pay as much attention to when putting the database together. This is representative. It's not comprehensive.
But we
concentrated on the swing states for the 2024 election cycle, and we've been adding to it ever since, you know. But there's a tip line there. If you know of anything, you can email it to us, and we can add it to the list. That's one of the projects that we do. We do a lot of special projects. If you go to the top of the website, and there's a link at the top, special projects. And so we've got the illegalaliencrimes.com there. We also have restorethemilitary.com, which is a comprehensive website of all of the officers that we can find throughout the military who promote wokeism, diversity, equity, inclusion, liberal politics, social experimentation, legalizing the United States Armed Forces. So that's a lot of fun. Our CEO is Doug Truax, who ran for Senate in Chicago in 2014 during the Tea Party wave. Did not get through the primary, but is a really interesting fellow. He's a West Point graduate and former Army Ranger. He's an impressive dude, and he's got some pretty strong opinions about what the military should be versus whether or not the military, for instance, should be paying for gender affirming care for active service members and that sort of thing.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Yeah, I would definitely bookmark that. So we've got less than 2 minutes left with you. So I got to ask the question, you guys, do you believe Oprah? Is there an obesity, Jane? Do you think so? Since, you know, it's New Year's and we're all losing weight, it's just my genes.
It's right next to that gene that says I may look like a boy, but I might be a girl. It's right next to that gene, you know, whether it's active or not. Those are the things. Are the active genes?
So was I assigned chubby at birth?
It's only if that gene goes active, I guess. I don't know.
Because I guess I was assigned chubby in middle age, because I never was.
Right. Yeah. No. I've seen the pictures. You weren't chubby back then.
No. Now it's like, oh my gosh, you hit a certain age, and it's not. But I don't know who believe. I don't think Oprah has the gravitas that she once had. Everyone's kind of laughing at her.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are certainly genetic factors that make you more prone to this. But you know, to say that they found the obesity gene is like saying they found the gay gene. You know, that's just not a thing.
Yeah. Well, on that note,
it really is.
We're out of time. I know. We never have enough time. We'll save it for the next time. We'll see Jeff in 2 weeks. That is it for us, everybody. Have a great weekend. We will see you Monday.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.